Welcome to BioIT World's Trends from the Trenches podcast, your insider's look at the science, technology, and executive trends driving the life sciences. I'm Allison Proffitt, editor of BioIT World. This episode is hosted by Stan Gloss, founder of BioTeam, a life sciences IT consulting company at the intersection of science, data, and technology. Joining Stan today is Bren Roberts of Roche Information Solutions. Roberts shares wisdom from his 30 years managing life sciences data and offers advice for building data citizenship, creating a fair data culture, and avoiding vendor lock-in. Let's listen in.
Good afternoon, Bren. It's so nice to have you on my podcast today. We've had so many conversations over the years, and this is actually the first one that we get to record together.
Hi, Stan. Yeah, great to see you again. And looking forward to having a discussion together this afternoon.
Yeah, so Bren, maybe you can tell us, for the few people in this world that don't know who you are, a little bit about your background.
Thanks, Dan. So, yeah, I'm currently at Roche, heading up data and analytics for Roche Information Solutions, which is a new digital health business and an insights business in healthcare. But I had a long history in pharma R&D. So for the last 15, 16 years with Roche before I moved over to this new role. And prior to that, working with AstraZeneca and Organon and others. And I guess for 30 years, pretty much now, I've been in the field of informatics, data science, and associated topics.
So this new division of Roche, why did they feel a need to actually make this new division?
So there were a number of efforts in digital health. And in this case, across the diagnostics division. So we had some little startup activities in digital health. And then we had a well-established business in the lab. So in the central diagnostic labs, providing information solutions and insight solutions. And a decision was made a couple of years ago to bring that together and really solidify that as a business and realize some of the synergies and opportunities to step up the offerings for different customer groups, both in the existing diagnostic lab space, but also to provide healthcare providers and even direct to patients.
Well, that's great. I mean, there are a lot of groups now forming digital health parts of pharmaceutical companies. And it's interesting because I recently took a course at the MIT Sloan School of Management on data monetizations. And these kinds of efforts of being able to kind of figure out what's the value, they talk about three different ways of monetizing data through improving, wrapping, and selling. And I'm starting to see the evolution of those phases happening in pharmaceutical companies. So certainly, you know, improving our data, but then this wrapping where you're taking your data and you're wrapping it with a digital technology for, say, companion drugs, you know, a companion effort. And then there are some that are starting to think about the data that we have. We could actually scrub it out and actually sell it as a product. And some are actually spinning out divisions with new names. We're working with one from Intermountain Health, and they're spinning off their data sets. And selling. So, I mean, there's a lot of that going on. Is that something that you're seeing on your side?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think everybody's realized how big an asset data are for either a corporation, a hospital group, an insurance or a payer or a national system. So there's many different players, I think, in healthcare and life science who have realized they're sitting on very real assets. And also that often those assets, they don't yield any value until they're maybe combined with other people's data or put into a context or a workflow or are activated through analytics and other things. So we see across the ecosystem many offerings, many people bringing data and insight solutions to the fore.
So when we go back, let's go back few years ago, to establish value for your data, you have to start somewhere. And I know that a number of years ago, we worked with you and Roche to do an assessment of some of what your data was. And you developed a whole thing called EDIS years and years ago. Could you tell us a little bit about the origins of the EDIS product and how that has come forward over the years?
Absolutely, yeah. So EDIS is still enhanced data and insight sharing. And it was really resulting from a realization after decades of running clinical trials that we had all these data and that very few people in the organization could use them or reuse them optimally. So for example, we might have run some tens of studies in breast cancer, and we were not able to provide those data in an integrated form where people could ask simple questions, maybe about biomarkers or about adverse effects or whatever it might be, the learnings from the data in clinical trials. So the effort started to bring those data together, to curate them, to ensure that they were of the highest quality, and to make them analytics ready, so that data scientists, clinical scientists, and others could actually utilize them effectively. So big program of work across all of Roche. So it involved our biggest functions doing clinical studies. That's our research and early development functions, as well as the late stage pharma development organization. And it was a super successful effort. And on the back of that, we really initiated a fair culture within Roche. So, data verification, making data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, and introduced the concepts of data citizenship and the responsibilities, as well as the privileges of being able to use data that have been generated by other parts of the organization, perhaps at another point in time and for a different purpose. And maybe finally, it was also a recognition that clinical trial subjects, many of them patients and physicians and others who were involved in creating those data, it was a sense that these data are not realizing their full value, despite the investment of people's lives that have gone into their generation. So I think it was also very nice to, within the bounds of consent, to be able to reuse those data to bring more value to future patients.
So you use the word data citizenship and being a good data citizen. Can you kind of unpack that term a little bit more? Because I'm not sure everybody knows what that term is. What does it mean?
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Yeah. Maybe it means something different, in different organizations. But the way we thought about it is a little like a citizen of a country. As a citizen of a country, you have certain rights, that may be defined in a constitution or a legal framework, and you have certain responsibilities. So as long as you abide by the laws and responsibilities, you have the luxury of certain rights, the rights of freedom, the rights to access healthcare or whatever it might be. And that was the similar concept in the world of data within the corporation. So, for example, the roles of data producer and data consumer were often different in the case of data reuse. So someone maybe generated data for a particular purpose, and they probably were involved in the use of the data for the first created purpose. But subsequently, other people might want to consume those data. And we saw some tensions occasionally between producers and consumers, where people perhaps didn't respect, for example, if someone had created some insights from somebody else's data and then wanted to publish them, but perhaps didn't inform or consult the original producer. Those were the kind of things that we experienced within the organization, and I know it happens everywhere. And so it was a bringing together of the community to agree, as a producer of data, I will make my data available in the agreed repositories or formats to the agreed standards, with a certain degree of metadata and annotation that enabled those data to be truly fair. And then as a consumer, I would take the responsibility to, where appropriate, consult, to inform, and to involve others who had been involved in the data. So that was the sort of notion of data citizenship, and that's still evolving now.
Yeah, so it's very interesting that you talk about producer-consumer relationships. You almost, it kind of triggers another common thing I've talked about with many other people, is starting to move towards thinking of data as a product. Because when you have producers and consumer relationships, the thing that's going, exchanging in the middle, is actually a product. So is that mindset of having a product mindset something that Roche thinks about?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have initiated work over the past couple of years using the data mesh principles and concept that's now quite established in the data space, and really formalizing, as you say, that exchange of data and reuse of data through products. And you know, that has really stepped up the formality and the ability to reuse data. And also, we include third party or our customer data, for example, in that space. So, you know, if we have diagnostic instruments out in labs, we have customers, of course, using those instruments and generating two types of data. There's the technical data that tells or informs about how the equipment is performing. And then we have the actual results that are generated for the clinical purpose at hand. And those two domains of data, as we call them, are two where we have great focus, because if we leverage them appropriately, we can bring a significant value back to that customer. So either in areas like predictive or predictive and preventive maintenance of the equipment, or possibly the optimization of utilization and reagent use and reagent inventories, these types of things. And then on the back of the actual clinical results coming out, if we can integrate those with perhaps EMR or EHR data, electronic medical and health record data, we can add even more value on the clinical side.
So when you start looking at these relationships between producers and consumers, are you kind of evaluating that stream as like a value stream from how the data is generated to how it's consumed? And are you looking beyond the traditional single user producer consumer relationship and secondary, tertiaries, and the other stakeholders that may be involved in deriving value from this stream?
I would say yes, but I'd say it's not highly developed yet in a formal way. You know, we talk about value streams for our business products, the things we're bringing to the market, and that's quite formalized as a value stream concept. I would say for the internal sharing and reuse of data, it's a little bit more anecdotal. So, for example, we'll look for examples where people have used data and try and estimate the value that was created from the reuse. And we've seen significant examples of that. So just to take one would be the reuse of control data from, or standard of care arm data from, a clinical trial. So as I said, we might have run many studies in a particular cancer type. And as long as they're within a certain time window, they've probably had a standard of care arm where patients have received the normal care of the day, best care available of the day. And then we're comparing that against, or we're comparing our experimental medicine against that standard of care. Now, you can imagine if we just keep repeating the standard of care arm when we already have essentially those data, it's wasteful. From a monetary perspective, it slows down the trial. It makes the trials bigger. And it's also, there's a big ethical question, because you're essentially, that cohort of patients is not contributing new value or new insight. So I think, you know, that's where we've seen great examples of value from reuse of data. So as I say, more anecdotal, but becoming more formalized, particularly in areas like control and standard of care arm reuse.
So my last interview with Chris Gibson, the CEO and founder of Recursion Pharmaceutical, we talked about their way of generating data. They actually, every data set that they produce is purpose-built. So it starts with understanding the end user and their needs and wants and uses of the data. And then the data is generated. And they have to do that because a lot of their discovery work is now moving towards the use of AI and machine learning. So it's even more critical if we're going to be feeding those algorithms. Is that something that you guys have to think about as well?
Absolutely. And it's unfortunate it's not always possible. So obviously, if it's an internal experiment, you know, whether it's in a lab or in a clinical setting, we have full control over the design of experiments and the structure and standards of the data collected and so on. So for internal data generation or partner data generation, we can go a long way towards that vision. But often, particularly in where we're working in the healthcare digital health setting, we often have no choice but to use data that were created for a different purpose. You know, we're often reusing data from the real world clinical settings, and there's high diversity, you know, perhaps between hospitals, between countries and so on. So in that case, we have to become very adept at making the best use of data that we were not able to design for, mm-hmm. for example, training machine learning models or algorithms of some sort. So as much as possible, I love the vision of purpose designed and built data sets. And maybe one of the biggest topics there is actually the full representation of space. So, you know, we often find if we reuse data, historical data, they are biased in certain ways. And one of the biases is towards positive outcomes. So for example, if you follow a pharmaceutical R&D project, you'll see as you move along the chain, you're getting essentially more and more focused into the areas that have been successful. For natural, you know, it's a pipeline. You perhaps screen very broadly and then narrow into a few chemical series and then eventually down to your clinical candidates. And so you're not getting a very representative data set as you move along that process. So that gives you a sort of a skewed data set, a biased data set. And similarly, we see biases of different types in real world data, in clinical data. And so one has to then think about how to overcome those biases.
So it seems as I look at my experience with data, that the monetization strategies for data seem to be an afterthought. And the question is why aren't we moving that monetization efforts to the forefront when we generate the data? Shouldn't we understand how we're going to monetize that data when we generate it?
I think that's a great question. And I guess it comes down to strategy. So most of the data we're using are created for other purposes, either R&D or, you know, clinical or healthcare activities. And then we've realized that they have such value that we reuse them. And in some cases, there is some form of monetization involved, or at least value exchange involved. And now I think we're at that point where we do see organizations who are generating data sets with the sole purpose of monetization. So I think we see that, you know, that changing over time.
So I think one of the struggles that they have with data is that data is an asset that doesn't appear on a financial balance sheet. But what if we move someday to the point where data is actually hard valued? And that, I mean, right now it's, you can trade data, you can do a lot of interesting things with data off the books, as they say. But, you know, could we come to a time sometime in the future where we really have put the efforts into truly believing that the data that an organization generates is its key asset?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we see it to a certain degree now with tech companies, for example, and maybe through a surrogate. So maybe it's number of subscribers or numbers of clicks or something that is a surrogate for the quantity and quality of data that they have access to for purposes like advertising and other uses. So I think we see a leaning towards that, you know, that valuation of data or surrogates of data. But the formal valuation of data sets, I think, is it's a fascinating topic. We've seen that actually in the past. Whenever we've joined a collaboration like a public-private partnership, and we bring in-kind contributions, and often in our setting, that includes data sets from historical research or clinical work. And it's always been very difficult to attribute a value, because, you know, the simplest way is to say, how much did it cost you to generate that data set? Or how much would it cost you to regenerate that data set? However, I think that's missing the point to a degree. So it's always been a challenge. And I think we've found fudges and ways around that, but we've never had there's never been a really precise way of valuing data that I've seen in that setting. I'm sure they're emerging. There are probably good examples out there. But I'm just not very familiar with them.
Yeah, I'd love to see a day where data sets actually have a 5-star rating on Yelp, the Yelp for data, you know, and just kind of knowing that I'm getting this from a great source and that other people have validated that this source of data is better than that source of data.
And absolutely. And I think that's coming with some of the data brokerage we see. So there are brokers out there who will sell either the data themselves or access to data to do certain types of analyses, and clearly they put a commercial value on that access, either the licensing or the per use. So it's coming. I think, you know, it's clearly, I guess, the value will be set by the market in terms of the willingness to pay as opposed to the cost of generation.
So, Bryn, my final question for you is that there are a lot of young startup companies that want to get their data right from the beginning. You have tremendous amount of experience with data over, you know, decades and decades of work. What advice would you give a young startup company that's wants to get their data right from the beginning and get off to the best start?
Great. Thanks, Dan. That's a cool question. I put myself back at the beginning of my career and wonder what advice would I love to have had? Well, I think The first is just to recognize whatever you do now, it will be outdated. So you have to accept a certain degree of pragmatism. But I think striving to really thoughtfully architect your data. So thinking about the data models that you're using, what does it mean to make those data complete? What kind of curation and annotation are needed at the time of production so that they are reusable in the future? And then really having some formal processes for long-term data management. And that includes potentially disposing of data at certain points in time when they are no longer of value, or could be even a liability, either through, you know, costs of storage or costs of maintenance. But there could be other types of liabilities as well, you know, just perhaps we see that example actually. If the laboratory technology that was used to generate them has gone out of date, then typically there comes a point when those data just need to be retired because the later technologies provide much more insight. So yeah, just a thoughtful process for management of data. And then I guess in terms of roles, is hiring people who can make that a reality. So, you know, depending on the size of the company, maybe we talked before about a chief data officer or a chief digital and data officer, making sure we have some data scientists and data engineers on staff. And another piece of advice I would say, be very cautious about proprietary lock-in. So becoming very dependent on a single technology or vendor for the fundamental modeling and structuring and storage of your data. Rather go with open standards And then, of course, use vendors for what they offer for additional value, but avoid getting locked into a proprietary data standard, data model, or something like that.
I love the concept of the lock-in, because realistically, when you think about it, data has to become the core competency that is owned by every organization these days, and it can't be outsourced to anybody.
No, and sometimes it can seem like a shortcut. You know, certain vendors will offer a very nice integrated solution, and maybe it's right for some organizations, so I'm not saying that's wrong, but just be thoughtful about it. You know, in 10 years' time, when your data are multi-magnitude steps larger, can you still afford to pay their licensing model? Do you still want to be reliant on them solely, maybe? And there's so many great open data standards and data models and tools out there that I think there's no excuse for accidentally being locked in.
Well, Bryn, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation, and I look forward to actually bringing you back, because there's a few more topics that I would like to talk to you about that we just didn't have time. So let's do this again sometime soon.
Thanks, Dan. My pleasure.